Okay, Be'ez Hashem, we start a new tractate, Maseches Chagiga. Chagiga literally means holiday offering, and the beginning, this Masechta focuses on the mitzvah that three times a year every Jewish male is obligated to come to Jerusalem and present himself before Hashem. And when you do that, there's a number of things that you have to do, and there are a number of mitzvahs that you need to do. So let's take a look at a couple sources in the Torah first. Okay? And let's start with Shmos, Perichav Gimel. I'll do it from over here. Shmos, Chav Gimel. Okay. Here it goes. Starting from verse 14. Three times you shall keep a feast to me in the year. Shalosh Regalim. You shall keep the feast of the unleavened bread. You shall eat unleavened bread 7 days as I command you, blah, 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 blah. And the feast of the harvest, verse 16. Okay, now, 17. Three times in the year all your males shall appear before the Lord. Okay, and the critical word in the Hebrew is shalosh ramim bashana yeira'eh. That's the word you got to be focused on. As you'll see, the Gemara is going to make drushes on that word. Yeira'eh, all your males shall appear before the Lord. So that's number one. Then it says, you shall not offer the blood of my sacrifice with leavened bread, nor shall the fat and blah, blah. Good. Okay. The first of the first fruits of your land you shall bring unto the house of the Lord your God. You shall not boil a kinnet, blah, blah, blah. All right, so that is the basic mitzvah, that three times a year you will not come, that you will be seen before Hashem. Okay, that's the first point. Second point, okay, let's look again in Sefer Dvarim. It's repeated, Perek Yud Tezayin, Tezayin. Okay. Again, it's repeated. Shalosh pamim ba'ashana, three times a year. Yeira'eh kol zechurchas p'nei Hashem elokecha. All your males shall be seen before Hashem your God. B'makom asher yivchar, in the place which He chooses. B'chag ha-matzos, u'b'chag ha-shavos, u'b'chag ha-sugos. Those are the three times. And now we add, V'lo yeira'eh es p'nei Hashem reikam. They shall not appear before Hashem empty-handed. That's a second thing. The first pasuk we looked in Sefer Shmos, it just says you appear. Here it says you can't come empty-handed. It means, so to speak, you got to come with a present, which means you're going to have to bring a korban. As it continues, 17, each kematnas yado, every man shall give according to what he is able, according to the blessings which Hashem has given to you. So this is the mitzvah, to appear three times in the temple, and you don't come empty-handed. So what does that mean, that you don't come empty-handed? That's what we're going to have to analyze. So, and there's a number of specific obligations. Now, it's very important. There's a number of different mitzvahs involved over here. That's be a great question, exactly what the Mishnah means over here. Okay? And that's going to be the debate of even the very first sentence over here. So where do we have the translation here? So the Gemara Mishnah starts by saying, HaKoil Chayovim Biri'iyo. All people are obliged in the mitzvah of Ri'iyo. The mitzvah of Ri'iyah mean, whatever that means, Ri'iyah. As a machlok, as in the Rishonim, what does it mean in the mitzvah of Ri'iyah? Ri'iyah means to be seen. So as a machlok, is exactly what that means. So the simple meaning is, in the mitzvah of appearing in the Temple Mount. Everyone agrees that for sure. Everyone, all are obliged in this mitzvah of Ri'iyah to be present and to be seen there. Now, it's not so simple, though, that the machlokas in the Rishonim over here. Look what he says. Rashi understands the Mishnah speaks only of the mitzvah of appearing in the temple. He's saying these words in the Mishnah are only referring to one thing. Everyone is obliged to appear in Jerusalem in the temple three times a year. However, the Tosfos brings a number of other opinions, because there's a number of mitzvahs that are involved, which we're going to find soon. We'll tell it to you right now. When you come to Jerusalem, there's three different korbanos that you will bring. Okay? First is called the olas re'iyah. An ola, a burnt offering that is designated to commemorate that you're coming to Hashem. You don't come empty-handed. Okay, you don't come empty-handed, so you have to bring an offering. It's a burnt offering, an ola, to accompany the fact that you are being seen. So it's called an olas re'iyah, the burnt offering that's brought for the person who's going to be seen in the temple on these three times a year. There's another korban you have to bring, and that's called a chagiga, a shalmei chagiga, where it's a festival offering, where you have to be able to eat some food. You have to enjoy the yontif. So how do you enjoy the yontif? By eating meat. So you have to bring an animal offering in order to celebrate the yontif. We'll see there's more than that too, but there's a number of things you have to do. So Rashi learns this three words, Hakol Chayav Bria, everyone's obliged in being seen. He says it just talks about everyone has a mitzvah to be there, finished. Tosfos is saying, no. Tosfos is saying the Mishnah speaks of both Re'iyah mitzvahs, appearing and the animal offering, the Olas Re'iyah. So it has a double meaning, right? So therefore, however, it was sufficient to mention only the former, the offering, since from there it could be deduced that if one is exempt from appearing in the courtyard, he certainly wasn't going to have to bring the offering. So it's talking about the animal offering, and of course you're going to come there. So anyway, it's a machlokas. Fine. So everyone is obliged. The Gemara is going to ask later, why did it say hakol, everybody? If you say everybody, it means you're trying to include somebody who might have thought otherwise. Everyone's obliged with the following exceptions. Now remember, this mitzvah, you'll see, as the Torah says, kol zechurcha, every male shall come. So let's see who is exempted from this mitzvah. Chutz, with the following exemptions. Number one, mecheresh, a deaf mute, a shoita, a deranged person, v'katan, and a minor. Because these three people, they're pater from all mitzvahs. They're not mentally competent. They're exempt from all mitzvahs. And you'll see in a minute, he says, although the term cheresh usually refers to a deaf mute, the Gemara rules that deafness alone or muteness alone also exempts one from the mitzvah of re'iyah. So we'll see either one. Now it also says, although a minor is personally exempt from mitzvahs, when he reaches a certain level of maturity, his parents become obligated to train him. It's a mitzvah of chinuch. So although he's not really obliged till he's 13, but when he comes to a certain age, a father is obliged to train the child, which is rabbinic in nature. Now, the question is, at what point do we begin training him? The Mishnah is going to talk about that shortly. All right, so who's excluded? Cheresh, shota, v'gatan. Who else is excluded? V'tumtum. Tumtum means someone we don't know the sex of the person. We don't know if he's a male or a female. Those private organs have been covered up with flesh, and we would need to go through a surgical procedure to go cut through and see does he have male organs or female organs. So we don't know. That's a tumtum. Androgynous, the fancy English word, hermaphrodite, meaning he has both the male and female signs. So it's a suffix what they are. So you're not obliged either. Who else is exempt? V'nashim and females, v'avadim and Canaanite slaves, she'enim v'shukram, who have not been freed. They're also exempt. Who else is exempt? Gemara is going to explain later how we know all this. Hachiger, a lame person, v'hasuma, a blind person, v'achoyle, a sick person, v'hazoked, an elderly person, and in general, umi sheni yochel lalos barago, someone who cannot go on his feet. Now, the common denominator of all these is, how can God expect the guy to go to Yerushalayim? He's blind. How's he going to get there? You're going to say, well, get someone to take him. But you can't oblige a person unless he is able to do it. You can't say, you are chayv, but somebody else has to do it for you. So all these people have a shit, they're specifically, the common denominator is, they're not able to go to Yerushalayim. How can God expect it from them? These are all the exclusions.
Here it says from Jerusalem to the temple courtyard. So
yeah, well,
Jerusalem, you can get any way you can. You can go by car.
Well, the truth is, it's even,
only Jerusalem to the temple courtyard.
Yeah, but they wouldn't also.
You to walk.
Well, that would exclude people even in Yerushalayim. But people outside Yerushalayim couldn't even get to Jerusalem.
Well, but if they can get to Jerusalem, that's fine.
But the point is, if they're not. The point, this commentary is saying, even if he lived in Jerusalem, he's potter.
Yeah, that's right.
Because he can't get there. And certainly if he lived outside Yerushalayim, he'd be potter. Sure, for okay. Sure. Now the question is, we said a minor is not obliged. Okay, how long is he still considered a minor? And then we switch to say he's old enough of a minor that he has to be trained in the mitzvah. At what point do we take the minor not to fulfill the biblical mitzvah, but to fulfill the rabbinic mitzvah of training the child? Ezo katan. Now what's considered a katan that's exempt from coming to the courtyard? Anyone who cannot ride on his father's shoulders. Once the kid can go on his shoulders, then rabbinically the father is obliged to train him and to bring him to Jerusalem. And on the shoulders to come from Yerushalayim to the Temple Mount. If the kid doesn't want to, then he's not obliged. He's too scared. Or let's say he says the weather makes it harmful, etc. Now, it's interesting, although the Mishnah mentions the Temple Mount, the mitzvah is to appear in the temple courtyard. Okay, fine. Okay. The Mishnah uses the Temple Mount only as a measuring stick, for if one can climb to that point, he can surely ascend the stairs that lead from the edge of the Temple Mount to the courtyard. In other words, you had to go to the Temple Mount, that was high, and then the stairs to the temple. Okay. And so if he can't go on his shoulders, just even from Yerushalayim to tell him out, he's too young. This is all Divrei Beis Shammai. It's all the opinion of the school of Shammai. Beis Hillel Omrim, Beis Hillel says, now Beis Hillel is usually the more lenient opinion. Kol sheniyach alechos biyada shalavov. A boy who's too young, he's not able to hold on to his father's hand. Velalos mirushalayim larbais, to go from Yerushalayim to Larbais. So that means, even though he's... Now, what's easier for the kid to do?
Right on the shoulder.
Right on the shoulder. So even according to Beis Hillel, even if he could ride on the shoulders, he's not obliged until what? Until he's able to walk. So again, so it's an older age. He has to be older than Shammai. So that's where Hillel, again, is the more lenient opinion. Now, he gives a reason. How do we know this? Why does he say he can walk as opposed to the father carrying him? Well, he has a very good proof. Shenemar, because what does the Torah say? It says, it's called Shalosh Rigolim. The holidays are called Shalosh Rigolim. You go to Yerushalayim, Shalosh Rigolim. Now, the bad English would say three Rigolim, pilgrimages. But if you look carefully, the word regalim has what smaller word inside of it? Regel, feet. That means only one who's able to go on his own two feet is obliged. Now, we already know, if an adult isn't able to walk up, he's not exempt. Similarly, if a child can't walk on his own two feet, what are we training him for? In other words, we're training the child to do the mitzvah. They got to train him to do the mitzvah in the way he'd have to do the mitzvah once he'd be an adult. Now, when he's an adult, how does he do the mitzvah? He goes on his own two feet, because if he can't go on his own two feet, he's not obliged in the mitzvah. So that's the mitzvah. So therefore, the training of the mitzvah has to be similar to when the kid would grow up, how he would have to do the mitzvah. And when he'd be going up, he'd have to walk. So therefore, he has to be able to walk on his two feet. We're just lenient. He can hold on to his father's hand. But going on the shoulder doesn't even approximate what the mitzvah is. I mean, technically, I mean, you could take a crippled person on your shoulder and take him to Jerusalem and to the Talmud, but he's not obliged. He's not obliged. So, therefore, we're not going to train a kid in a situation where you're not obliged. So it's interesting. What will Beis Shammai's retort be? We'll have to wait to the Gemara on Daf Vav, and we'll see how Shammai responds to that. Fine. Now we have another machlokes as to what is the cheapest amount of money you spend on these various korbanos. Again, we've got the old. Remember the two. These you got. This is going to be throughout this masechta. We got two primary korbanos: the olas re'iya, the totally burnt animal. That for the fact that you are being seen there, that's your gift to God. And then the other one's called the shalmei, the shlomim, the peace offering that you eat some of it, chagiga, to celebrate the holiday. So the question is, how much money is the minimum amount that you're going to spend on this? So again, a machlokes, Beis Hillel, and Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai Omrin, Beis Shammai says, Hare'iya, the Olas Ariya offering, that's the one that gets totally burnt, and that's your obligation as you're being seen by Hashem, has to be worth at least Shtei Kesef, two silver ma'os. Okay, we come back to that, what we learned in the Rambam. Now, how big is a ma'a? Let's take a look. A ma'a is 1/6 of a dinar. There's a coin called a dinar. A ma'a is 1/6. So if you have to have two silver ma'os, that's 1/3 of a dinar. It has to be worth at least 1/3. Although the Torah obligates the pilgrim to bring in olas derived from the verse, and they shall come within, it does not set a minimum value. Okay, so the rabbis now are setting a minimum value. It's got to be worth 1/3 of a dinar. 1/3 of a dinar in silver. That's how much it'll be worth. The chagiga and the minimum value, that's for God. And the one for you, the chagiga, that chagiga sacrifice, ma kesef, half of that. At least one silver ma, which was 1/6 of a dinar. All right? Now, there is going to be a third offering that Gemara does not talk about, and that's called the Shalmei Simcha, a Shlomim for Simcha, for joy, which basically means in case you needed more, if you didn't have enough, if that first offering wasn't enough, let's say you had a big family, you had a big appetite, so then there was another one, but it's not being talked now.
Second offering.
No, it's a third one called
the second one.
Yeah, the first one is burnt, so you're not eating it anyway. That first one is, it's God's, I have nothing to do with it. The second one is, because there's an obligation to enjoy the yontif, and the Gemara is going to explain, the only way you enjoy a yontif is by having meat. So therefore you have to bring a korban shlomim, which you're allowed to eat, and that's called a shalmei chagiga, the festival shlomim. So this is the two that we're assigning minimum values. There's another one called shalmei simcha. If you needed more, another shlomim to enhance the joy, that we're not talking about yet. So it comes out, according to Shammai, more money is spent on the one for God, less money is spent on the one for you. Ubeis Hillel Omrim, Beis Hillel says the opposite. Hare'iya, the one that goes to God, is a ma'a kesef, is one ma'a, okay, that's 1/6 of a dinar. The chagiga, and the chagiga is shtei kesef, is double that. At least two silver mo. So, and later on, above, we're going to explain the machlokes, what that depends on as well. All right, that's the Mishnah. So basically, what did the Mishnah do? It told us everybody's obliged with a number of exceptions. A child is a machlokes when he becomes to be obliged. Is it when the father can carry him on his shoulders, or can he has to be able to walk with his father? And finally, what's the minimum amount of those two korbanos? Okay, let's just start the Gemara here. The Gemara wants to know the very first word. The very first word said, hakol. It says, hakol, everybody is chayv b'ri'iyah. Everyone. Now, why does it have to say all? Hakol la'asuye mai. When it says the word all, what is it coming to include? When you have an all, that means there could be certain borderline cases that I wouldn't be sure how to deal with it. And therefore, we have to say all to include even things you might not have thought are included. That's the general rule. It could just say, just tell me who's not obliged. The Mishnah could have said it simpler. Say, the following people are excluded, which tells me anybody else has to do it. Why do you say everybody's obliged and then you start making the exclusion? That means I'm trying to include something that I wouldn't intuitively thought of, and it's going to be something else that's included that I would, in my mind, I think not. So we're including this fellow. So that's what we're asking. What is this word hakol coming to include? So Gemara says, la'asuye, to include the following situation, and we'll have to explain this. Mi shechatz yoeved, a human being who is considered half of him is considered a Canaanite slave. Vechatzio ben chorin, and half of him is considered a free person. Now you're going to ask, how do you ever get to such a situation? The answer is very simple. Let's say a man owned a Canaanite slave. Now, the law of a Canaanite slave, he's treated like property, and he could be inherited by the inheritors, just like property. So let's say there's a father who has this Canaanite slave, and he dies, the father, and he has two sons who inherit all his assets. So, and there was only one Canaanite slave to inherit. So what happens? They're partners in the ownership of the Canaanite slave. Good. And then what happens? One of the two brothers emancipates the slave. So now it comes that, so now he's part slave, because as the brother owns half of him as a slave, the other one is free. So Gemara is going to teach us that the free, now, you'd say, well, we already said that a Canaanite slave doesn't come. A Canaanite slave in general, full Canaanite slave doesn't bring. So what about a half? So the answer is the half of him that's free, that obligates him, and once he's freed, he has the status of a Jew. You have to remember that. Remember, a Canaanite slave, once he becomes a slave, first of all, to be a slave, he has to be circumcised. He has to keep as many mitzvahs as a woman keeps. He's like, quote-unquote, half-Jewish. What's lacking is his freedom. Should the owner free him, he transforms from being a Canaanite slave into being a Jewish convert. So if he's totally converted, he's for sure obliged. But here he's only half converted. Only half of him is Jewish, as it were. So now we say, because of that half, he's still obliged to come to the temple 3 times a year. That's what he's saying. Now, it's not...
My brother still owns him. He's still a slave. I don't know how they can really make that distinction there. One brother still owns him. Doesn't matter what the other brother did. He's a slave. How can you...
Okay, so we're going to see... You're going to see there's a big machlokes as to how, what do we do with such a person? And that's what Gemara is going to elaborate on now. Okay, but that's, you're right, there's a machlokes exactly what is his status? How do we treat this fellow? So let's continue. Gemara is going to now discuss this. Now there's a big machlokes. What do you do? Now let's say you're at that stage. Okay, now you got this guy who's in this predicament. So what do we do? Do we leave him like this? Could the one brother who didn't give him away say, okay, that's a good setup. So now what happens? Like, does he work for him half the time? Yeah. Or what does he do? Better question. A Canaanite slave in general, who does he marry? Canaanite slave. Who does he marry? A regular Canaanite slave. A regular Canaanite slave.
Only another slave.
Another female Canaanite maidservant. That's who he can be with, right? But now, wait a minute. If he's half slave and half Jew, can he now live with a Canaanite slave woman? Because the Jewish part isn't allowed to live with him. So now the question is, I agree there can be at least temporarily, if one brother frees him, so at that point he's half slave, half free. But what's the go-forward position once the one brother's done this? So this is a machlokas in the Gemara. In other words, can this guy hang around like this for the next 30 years as such? Or this is not a permanent situation? And that's the word it's going to discuss right now. So now we're saying it's mishnah including a half-slave, half-free. And it goes like the following. So that's according to one opinion. We're going to see now. The Gemara is going to ask, wait a minute. So you're saying that comes to include, but there's another rabbi, Ula Ravina, but Ravina, this won't work according to Ravina, because what does Ravina hold? The Omer, he says, a blanket statement, Mishachatza Evet V'chatza Ben Chorim, Pater Min Ariyah. He says a person who's half free, half slave, he's exempt from the mitzvah of Ariyah, for whatever reasons. So according to that, so then, what's the Mishnah coming to include? If it's coming to include someone who's a little bit unusual, but Ravina says he doesn't have to go. So who are we going to include? According to Ravina, what gets included with the word hakol? The Gemara gives a first answer, says, what is going to include? A half-half. But Ravina holds a half-half isn't obliged. So what's it going to include according to him?
A freed slave.
So he's going to say, no, a freed slave doesn't need to include it because we know a freed slave is chayv. So hakol asuye, what does hakol come to include? My, what does it come to include? Lasuye chiger biyom rishon. Here's an interesting case. Comes to include a fellow who was lame on the first day of Yom Tov. Now, is a lame person obliged in this mitzvah?
No.
But look what happens. He was lame on the first day, but then v'nispasha biyom sheni, and then he got healed on the second day. Okay? So on the first day, he was exempt from the mitzvah, but now, what about on the second day? That he got healed. So the Mishnah is coming to include such a case where a fellow who was healed on the second day, even though he was exempt on the first day, and I would have thought since he's exempt on the first day, maybe he's exempt the rest of the yontif. The answer is no. If he's healed in that yontif, he is obliged to come. So now we got to see. And what?
Assuming he was in Jerusalem at the time.
Well, or where he could get there. Regardless, or even if he wasn't, and he's obliged to come, so let him walk on the second day. Whatever. But be that as it may, can the obligation begin on day two? That's the point. And he's saying the word hakol is coming to include such a person. Because according to Ravina, it can't be including a half slave, because a half slave, he says, doesn't have to go. So what's it going to include according to Ravina? A person who was lame on the first day and was able to walk on the second day. Now, this too is going to depend on a machlokas as well. Depends on another machlokas. Is this acceptable opinion? Hanicha, this is all good and well. Laman domer kulam tashlumim zevazeh. This is good according to a person that says that each day of Yontov is a fulfillment of another. What does this mean? So let's see what's going on over here. Let's look at footnote 18. It's telling us the next Mishnah. Here's the case. The one who has not brought his chagiga offering on the first day of a festival, what do you do if you do? Let's say Pesach is 7 days. Now, you should really come the first day and bring your offering. What if you didn't? So the Mishnah says you may do so all the days of the festival. Okay? Fine. Now, there's a machlokas. What does that mean that I can now bring the other days of the festival? That's the law. If you don't bring on the first day, you can bring the other days. What does that mean? So Amorayim there dispute whether the Mishnah means that any offering brought on a subsequent festival day is perforce the fulfillment of the first day's obligation. In other words, when I bring this offering on the second day, it's taking care of the obligation that started on the first day. Or whether the first day obligation becomes a new second day obligation. And the second day obligation becomes a third day obligation, and so on. Okay? In other words, is it a brand new obligation? In other words, am I making up for the first day? Or is first day's farfalim?
Yeah.
And second day, and if I gave on the first day, then I don't have to bother anymore. But if I didn't, now a new obligation raises itself on the second day. The legal significance of the dispute involves our very case, where one was lame on the first day of the festival, and so there was no first day obligation to bring an olas, ri, or chagiga. But then he became healed on the second or subsequent day. For anyone who says an obligation to appear and bring sacrifice is transferred to a later day, each day's obligation becomes an independent one. Thus, one who was healed on the second day becomes obligated even though he was exempt on the first day. This being the case, the Gemara explains the word all is satisfactory. All is indeed alluding to one who has incurred this deferred obligation. According to the one who says that all delayed payments are merely a payment of the first day's obligation, one who's exempt on the first day remains exempt for the entire festival. Therefore, thus, all cannot be referred to our case individual who was lame on the first day. So that's the point. If when the first day is finished and you didn't bring it, is the second day making up for the first day? Or do we say, no, a brand new obligation evolves on the second day? We have nothing to do with the first day. So if the other days are considered a makeup for the first day, so if I wasn't obliged on the first day, there's nothing to make up. But if we look at the other days as it becomes a new obligation for one who did not perform it, so if I wasn't obliged on the first day, so it's a new obligation on the second day. So this answer to include a lame person who was lame on the first day but could walk on the second day, that's only going to be good according to one rabbi. The rabbi who says that the second day is a new independent mitzvah, but it's not a make-up for the first one. And therefore, this answer, if you're going to say Ravina, who holds half-slave, does not bring, and the mitzvah coming to include a case of the lame guy who could walk on the second day, that only works if you hold it's an independent new mitzvah. Ela lamanda amar kulan tashum derishim. If you're going to say it's a make-up of the first, then akol asuyemai. So what will akol be included? Okay, so we're going to have to find another case. And then we'll see if the other case will fit in according to everybody. So we're going to stop at this point. We're trying to understand what is Hakol coming to include. It could include a half slave if you hold that a half slave is obliged. It could include a guy who was lame on the first day and was able to walk on the second day if you learn it's a separate independent mitzvah. But what if you say a half slave doesn't oblige and it's not an independent mitzvah? Then I got to find a third scenario, and that's what the Gemara is going to be looking for.